To start things off, the United States military has pulled out of Iraq's major cities. We had set a June 30th deadline for doing so, and at midnight last night, there were fireworks going off throughout Iraq, which has got to freak out Iraqis. You know, you've been a war zone for 6 years, and you go to bed at night, and maybe it's been a couple of weeks since you heard anything explode, and now you're hearing boom, boom, boom. No, it was celebratory explosions last night. To talk about this, I've invited my friend Paul Rykoff, who's the executive director of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, to join me on the show here today. Hi, Paul. How are you today?
I'm very well, sir. Good to be with you.
Always good to be with you. Paul, by the way, served at the beginning of this conflict as a first lieutenant on the ground, boots on the ground, as I like to say, there. And now, as we are moving some of your colleagues out of these cities, what's your view of what we've done and where we're going to go in the next year or two?
Well, it's been a long 6 years. You know, I went in 2003, and things have changed so many times over. But I think, you know, we've got to understand it. It's been a long process for our troops on the ground. You know, you've got folks now doing fourth, even fifth tours. So I think this is welcome news. You know, we're on track to leave the cities today, and the president's pledging that by August of 2010, about, you know, only 14 months from now, or maybe, depending upon how you look at it, a long 14 months from now, all combat troops are supposed to be out of Iraq by the end of 2011. So, you know, it's a badly overstretched military, and for them, I think that this drawdown and some relief and some light at the end of the tunnel is welcome news. Got to give a tremendous amount of credit to those troops on the ground who've really turned things around in a big way, and to the Iraqi forces that are stepping up, but it's still very fragile, and those of us who've been there know that things can change very quickly.
In retrospect, Paul, did the surge work?
You know, I think that the surge was a part of an overall strategy that worked. I think the reconciliation with the Sunnis was probably as important as the surge itself. You know, the so-called Sunni awakening really changed things and turned Iraqis against al-Qaeda. And the security forces on the ground definitely helped. We start to see some level of political reconciliation. I think you saw a real focus from Washington on Iraq for a while, and now, you know, what I'm really concerned about is that is so fragile, what we've got going on, that it doesn't seem like the media or the American public or Washington's focused on Iraq. It seems like we've shifted our attention to the economy, you know, to Michael Jackson and a bit to Afghanistan. But if we don't keep our eye on the ball there, it could devolve quickly.
Yeah. Now, some people are saying that this is the time that the insurgents will strike because we did hand over control to the Iraqis. This is the time where it's going to come back. Of course, former Vice President Dick Cheney saying, you know, hey, wait a minute, this may not be the time. What do you think?
Yeah, well, when I went through Fort Benning as an infantry officer, they always train you to turn the map around, to look at the battlefield from the perspective of the enemy. And if I was the enemy, I would be doing that. I would be looking at this as a transitional period. I would want to test the new Iraqi units coming in. I saw that when I was in Baghdad, any time we had a changeover, the enemy would definitely try to test those new units and see what they were made of. I mean, violence overall is down, but these extremists are still trying to spark a lot of attacks and retaliation. In June, more than 300 Iraqis were killed, and 10 Americans were killed. So it's still a very violent place and a very fragile area, and we're going to need help from the neighbors in the area. We're going to need that entire region to contribute to the stability in Iraq, and we're going to need the government to step up. There's still not clean drinking water to enough places. Electricity output has improved, but it's still not reliable. Those quality of life factors have got to continue to progress and stay stable.
And Paul, it's my understanding that our troops could still go out on patrol, but only at the request of the Iraqi forces. How does that sit with American soldiers sitting around and waiting for the Iraqis to say, please come help save us?
You know, it's a tough position. I mean, these folks have been in so many tough positions throughout. I remember, you know, a year and a half ago, we were talking about them being in these remote outposts inside cities and how difficult that would be because they were so outnumbered and so overextended. You know, this is tough, too, you know, but at least you're inside a safe base. The Iraqis have got to really put up or shut up here. I mean, they're on the big time, and they've got to produce, and the Americans will be there for air assets, for medical support. I mean, you've got to look at the fact that their aviation assets, helicopters, airplanes in Iraq are still really limited. So they're going to depend on our folks for air support, for artillery strikes, for the kind of the big guns that they may need if they really get into some tough conflicts.
You're absolutely right that this does not mean that we're pulling out of there. In fact, even after the end of the combat mission next August 2010, we're still going to have 30, 40, 50,000 American forces there serving as military trainers and advisors And they'll be on there on the ground there for another year and a half after that, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is still a long fight. You know, we are, as an organization, really looking at these folks coming home, which is going to be, you know, kind of a critical influx of veterans in the next year to 2 years. That's why we need to focus on education and employment and mental health, physical health, making sure that these folks coming back from third and fourth tours are supported when they get here. You know, that this drawdown by President Obama, you know, is a good thing. It's a sign of stability. It's going to relieve some pressure on the military. But we've got to look ahead a couple steps and think about the veterans' resources that are going to be necessary to support these folks once they get home from doing such a great job and bearing such a huge burden.
Talking with Paul Rykoff from Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America here on the Big 550 KTRS. You and I have talked so many times over the last several years since you came back from Iraq and founded IAVA, and we've talked a lot about veterans' issues in this country, and I know you and your crew have done a hell of a job of lobbying for veterans on Capitol Hill. Update me on where we are with getting better care for the men and women who are coming home and all of the other issues on your agenda.
We've come a long way, and we really, really, in the last year especially, have made tremendous progress on veterans' issues. I still think we've got a long way to go, but two things that I would cite as real successes are the new GI Bill, which was signed into law just about a year ago and has started to be implemented. The VA is getting thousands of requests for this new educational benefit that will allow every one of the 1.8 million men and women who've been through Iraq and Afghanistan to go to college. That's a huge opportunity. So if you've served your country, now you have an opportunity to get an education on Uncle Sam's dime. So that's a huge piece of progress. And last week, the president actually signed a new provision that would allow our troops to transfer that benefit to their children in the event they're killed in action. That was a huge win for us and something we've been pushing for a while. VA funding is up tremendously. The biggest funding increase in over 77 years, and we're going to need that as all these folks come home. And last week, another big win for IAVA was we got back pay for folks who have been stop-loss. Stop-loss are extended beyond their enlistment contract, kind of a controversial policy, but for every troop that was stop loss, they're going to get $500 a month in back pay. And we think that, you know, they've done such a great job, they're entitled to this money, and it's good to see that Washington's stepping up and make sure they receive it in this critical time when they need it with a tough economy.
That's all good. Speaking of the economy, are we having problems with veterans coming home and finding that the jobs they were promised aren't there anymore?
Definitely. We need stronger legal protections, especially for National Guardsmen and reservists who at times have made up 50% of our force on the ground. They've never been asked to do so much. So we need better enforcement of USERRA laws that are designed to protect these folks. We need, you know, compensation for small business owners. If you have a small landscaping company, you've only got five guys on staff and one of them leaves to go to Afghanistan, we've got to do more to help that business support that vet and be able to give them tax credits or other incentives so they can hire vets coming home. But we've got an unemployment rate that's above the national average. Vets coming home are over 12% of them are unemployed. Mortgage foreclosure rates around military bases are about three times the national average. So everything that's hitting the average American with this tough economy is hitting vets even harder. So we've got to get them more support, got to get them more job training, and the GI Bill will also help.
I also have to ask you about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You're probably familiar with the story of Dan Choi, a U.S. Army lieutenant, who today is having a hearing in an armory in New York State where he's a member of the National Guard there. He was one of these guys who was out there leading soldiers on patrol in Iraq, and for all the time he was there, nobody cared that he was gay, but he outed himself in an article in an Army Times newspaper and on MSNBC to protest Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And, you know, over the last dozen years or so, we've lost 10,000 military personnel for violating the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Today, President Obama is having a meeting with some leaders of the gay community at the White House who are very upset with him because he promised that he would end this policy. And yet under his watch, there have been about 250 gay and lesbian service members who've been discharged for Don't Ask, Don't Tell violations. What's going to happen here?
I think the president's made it clear he intends to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, to change the law, or to push for the change in law. I think that will probably happen in his first term. I don't know if he's going to be able to get it done this year. He's been pretty specific in saying that it's largely up to Congress to change the law. The president can, you know, issue an executive order that would stop people from being dismissed from the military under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but, you know, I think he's got to push it through the Congress. We need to have a national dialogue on this. I think if he were just to wave his presidential magic wand and repeal the law, it would create some serious pushback in the Congress and also in the military. It doesn't me. It's not the right thing to do. But I think he's wrestling with his agenda and wanting to overturn Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but also wanting to make the impact on the culture of the military as minimal as possible. But young troops look at this issue very differently. It's a 15-year-old policy, and I think it definitely needs to be reevaluated. There's a lot of conversations going on inside the Pentagon, and somebody like Dan Choi, no matter how you feel about gay rights, he's somebody we need in the military. I mean, he's a trained combat vet. He led people in combat, and he's a linguist. He's an Arabic linguist, and we need all the Arab linguists we can get. So I think it's about time, we looked at that policy and had a real national conversation about it.
I agree. I think there's probably been a generational change with the men and women who are serving compared to those who were there when the policy was first put in place under Clinton in 1993.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Admiral Sestak, who's now a congressman, was on the media this weekend talking about when he was in an aircraft carrier group, the average age was 19 and a half. So 19 and a half year olds look at gay rights and these social issues much differently than folks who were in the Vietnam generation and past generations. So I think we've got to take their opinions into account, socialize it through the military, talk to veterans groups, and have a real national dialogue. I think the wrong thing to do is to try to jam it down the military's throat like President Clinton did early in his term, and he saw the political impact and he saw how that disrupted the military and his relationship with the military. Obama's off to a pretty good start with the military. Michelle Obama's been helping there too, doing a lot of work with military families, and I think he wants to try to continue that momentum throughout his term.
All right, before I let you go, Paul, I want to go back to Iraq for just a second. I was one of those who didn't want us to go into Iraq in the first place and worried about the neocons who were promising that we would change that region and put democracy in place, because I know a little bit about the history of that region and 4,000 years of sectarian fighting within that nation between Shia and Sunni and Kurd, etc. Once we withdraw, and we've begun that withdrawal today, and as we begin the further withdrawal over the next year and a half or 2 years, and we let the Iraqis take over, what guarantee do we have that the Iraqis are going to play nice with each other? Not even worried about Al-Qaeda and other people, just playing nice with each other.
We have no guarantee. And I think that's what we need to be honest with the American people about. This may turn out well, but it also may turn out poorly. And ultimately, at some point, I think we've got to prioritize our national defense and our economy. I mean, what are our priorities going to be? I think the president's made it clear he wants to reset those priorities. And at some point, that point is coming very quickly. We hand it over to these folks. There's definitely questions about how the Kurds are going to react and whether or not they're going to try to lay claim on cities that were previously taken over by Saddam. There's still a huge problem with refugees. About 4 million Iraqis have left their homes, but only about 100,000 have come back. Those are a lot of doctors and teachers and educated folks you're going to need to rebuild that economy. So there's absolutely no assurance. But I think we've done a tremendous amount to set them up to success, and our troops have really performed incredibly well under very tough circumstances. And now the ball's in the Iraqis' court.
Paul Rykoff, Executive Director of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. It is always a pleasure.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on today. I'm Paul Harris doing the John Brown Show on the Big 550 KTRS.